那你可以然后放这个按奥出来，这样子哦，有上一点。上一方面 can I open from the home zero？看到，I agree now with everyone name face you know and I see some students some of you just write really good sentence I can kind of give me some impression that some students really like they the a lot of students
Okay, welcome back. Let's see. So the first thing I wanted to do today is to show you how to use WebSign just a little bit. Now let me change the screen share. Okay, so on screen, what you should be seeing is a student view of WebAssign. Sorry, was there a question? Okay, well, speak up if you have a question. Of course, what you have to do in order to access WebAssign is to purchase a subscription from WebAssign. You can do that either at the bookstore or directly from WebAssign. Once you have your subscription, in addition, you're going to need to fill in the class ID, which, let's see. It's on the syllabus. It's also on the Canvas homepage. The WebAssign class ID is this thing here, OK State 28619143. But with that information, you'll get access to the WebAssign problems. And so here I want to show you a couple what it looks like once you start it. So first assignment there. And well, I've got one answer already filled out. So the first assignment is going to be really simple. So, for example, in this first problem, you're just supposed to look at these four pictures and figure out which one corresponds to the vector with components 5, 0 that has its tail beginning at the point 1, 1. Well, so the first component is usually the horizontal component, and the second component is the vertical component. So, look like A is the right answer. Its tail is beginning at a point with coordinates 1, 1, and then the direction it's heading is it's going over 5 horizontal units. So you'd simply, this is the wrong answer, but you would click on that to get the right answer. And there's similar other problems where you just have to identify, you're given a vector and you have to figure out which picture it corresponds to. Two is now with 3-dimensional vectors, so you'll have to think a little bit more visually, either by trial and error or simply by reading this 3-dimensional projection on a 2-dimensional piece of paper correctly, you should be able to get the right answer. What I want to also point out to you are these later problems where you actually have to write down a vector as an answer. So in this problem 4, you're given 2 vectors, And by the way, WebAssign is writing the vectors vertically because they're looking forward to when we treat vectors as matrices. And so they're typically writing an ordered list of numbers written vertically rather than horizontally. So 3 is still going to be the first component of the vector A, and 0 is going to be its second component. Now to add those, so it's giving you A plus B is equal to what? All right, so what you have to do is add the first component. So 3 plus 3 would equal 6, and 0 plus 4 would equal 4. And so that's typically how you enter vectors. You enter one for you have one entry box for each component of the vector. And so similar. So I think with these hints, you should have no problem completing the first homework assignment in 15, 20 minutes, maybe even less than that. So any questions on WebAssign and how to use it? There'll be later on the second homework assignment, you'll have to enter matrices, but I'll show you how to do that when that time comes up. Okay, so let me stop this share and go back to the regularly scheduled lecture. Here we go. Okay, so last week we introduced vectors, the vector space Rn. These objects were all either order lists of numbers, that's a vector, but the set of all possible order lists of a given dimension n, that's the vector space we call Rn. And we concluded Friday's lecture with a discussion of some geometric objects that we can make from vectors, the principal one being what a hyperplane is. So I'll begin today's lecture by reminding you of what a hyperplane is. Then I'll relate hyperplanes to linear systems, systems of linear equations. And then we'll go from linear equations to the data that is needed to specify the linear equations. And that data I'll formulate as certain data type called a matrix. And then we'll learn how to multiply matrices together. And I think that's probably about as far as we'll get today. Okay, so a hyperplane is this geometric object that you create by collecting together typically an infinite set of vectors. There's going to be a set that's formed by starting at a point P0, prescribed by some specific vector, and then straying or departing from that point in any of, in this instance, k different directions. So the subscripts 1 through k on that boldface D is going to be interpreted as follows. So when I'm using boldface fonts, I'm indicating vectors. And so I have an initial vector P0 and a bunch of directions, D1 through DK. Now, what we do to create this hyperplane is we start at a given point, and then we allow ourselves to stray from P0 along an arbitrary vector that's formed by multiplying one vector D1 by a real number T1, another vector D2 by a real number T2, and et cetera, until we reach the final vector TK times DK, and we add those things up. And then moreover, we let the parameters T1 through TK vary over the entire real line. All right, so we have an infinite number of choices for each of these scalars, T1 through TK. And so this set actually consists of an infinite number of vectors, and we call it such a set a hyperplane. It includes, this construction includes a point, so that's where we just would have a single vector with no additional parts, where you get a line by starting at a single point and then adding to it, sorry, this should be a plus sign, some number times a particular direction, and then you allow this parameter t to range over the entire real line. And then higher dimensional objects, from point to plane, to line to plane to hyperplane or general hyperplanes. Well, they all sort of follow this basic pattern. Okay, so that's the construction we introduced on Friday. What I want to show you today is how these hyperplanes arise quite naturally when you try to solve systems of linear equations. Okay, so let's consider first a single linear equation in two unknowns, the unknowns being x and y, and just this one equation. Well, in solving these sort of equations since high school, you can solve for the variable y, and then just isolating using algebraic operations like adding minus x to both sides and then dividing by 2, you'll be able to isolate y on one side of the equation and the variable x on the opposite side. And here's the relation. So the solution set is then going to consist of all vectors x and y in the plane such that the variable y is related to the variable x via this formula. All right, now that doesn't yet look like a hyperplane. So let's massage this set a little bit so that and we can make it look like a hyperplane. First thing I'll do is I'll rewrite this set by directly substituting for y into this component. So this depends, so what we'll do then is we'll write it. The solution set is all the points where the first coordinate is x and the second component is 1/2 times 1 minus x. But any x will do, so we'll keep it in set notation like so. And then because I'm letting x vary over the entire real line, it doesn't really matter what x is. I can even relabel it using a different variable t. It's the same set because the idea here is the solution set consists of all these vectors, no matter what x is. I'm just relabeling that. So we'll get back to a formula that looks like this. All right, and so here it is. Now I've got it relabeled. And now what I'll do is I'll break this vector t 1/2 1 minus t up into two pieces. You see that the third line is equal to the fourth line. Let me write the, we have 0, 1/2 plus t times 1 minus 1/2. That's a vector sum. So that's the same thing as 0, 1/2 plus, let's do the scalar multiplication, t minus 1/2 t. And now finally, let's do this this vector sum, and that will be, 0 plus t is t. Then we have 1/2 plus minus 1/2 times t, and then that is going to equal t 1/2 1 minus t, which is what I have in this line above on the slide. So in fact, the solution set of this single equation in two unknowns is a hyperplane. It's a set of vectors that we form by starting at a given vector 0 1/2 and straying from it in a particular direction 1 minus 1/2 by an arbitrary multiple t. Okay, so this shows that solution sets of a single linear equations are going to be, one equation and two unknowns, it's going to be a line. But it's also a hyperplane because it has that set as this form. Okay, let's do another example. Now we'll look at two equations and two unknowns. And here we'll use some high school algebra to solve it. From the first equation, we can solve it.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Does this Is a hyperplane where there's infinite solutions to that equation?
Yeah, it does mean that there's infinite solutions. You'll get a different solution for each value of x here.
Okay, so if we have an equation that has a boundary, for example, then it would not become a hyperplane?
Well, I don't know what boundary you're talking about. We are just looking at ordered lists of numbers. So they don't have any boundaries or anything. Although they can be represented geometrically, think of these primarily as just ordered lists of numbers that were or variables, x and y, that we're solving for. So we're not thinking of, you know, like spheres that actually do have a boundary. These are just vectors living in space, and typically we will never see their boundaries. Although, in some sense, the vectors, if you have a hyperplane, they will be living on a surface. It may be a higher dimensional surface, but typically a hyperplane is like a surface. Let me see if I can show you a hyperplane in three dimensions. I'll hold up a piece of paper. So here's a, let's see if I get it from the camera. Here's a flat two-dimensional surface, but it's embedded in a three-dimensional space. Don't think of the paper as a boundary, just think of it as the hyperplane, the way it appears embedded inside a higher dimensional space. Okay?
Thank you.
Okay, so the point is that when we solve a single equation or even pairs of equations, we'll always be able to write the solution set in this form. So I'm introducing this structure right at the start of the course because we're going to be using hyperplanes throughout the course. All right, so let's see. If we have two equations, we'll solve it using high school techniques. First thing we'll do is we'll use the first equation to solve for one variable, say x in terms of y. Then we can substitute this value for x into the second equation, and that will give us an equation for y alone that we can solve. And then once we know what y is, we can back substitute into the first equation, or this rendition of the first equation, and get a value for x. And so the solution to this pair of equations and two unknowns, in this case, it's unique. There's only one choice of x and one choice of y that will satisfy both equations. Now that doesn't look like a hyperplane, but if I construct a set from this, the solution set consists of a single point. And that's the analog of this hyperplane expression for a single point. You don't have these additional directions when you're describing a single point or a single vector. You just have the vector itself sitting there. Okay, so even if we have more equations, we're still getting solution sets that look, that have the form of this general hyperplane, a point, but in a bunch of scalar multiples of another directions, or simply in this last example, a single point. All right, now we're going to generalize this situation to something much more too complicated to be considered in high school usually, and that is we're going to start to consider large systems of equations where we may have as many as n equations, and we may have more than two unknowns. We may have as many as m unknowns. So we'll write such a system in this generic fashion. I'll typically put all the variables on the left-hand side, and they'll put the numbers that appear isolated and by themselves, I'll keep them on the right-hand side of the equation. So we'll say that an n by m linear system is a set of n equations in m unknowns. And here's such a system explicitly written down, although I didn't write down all the equations. I wrote the first two down, and I wrote the last equation down, and using these these ellipses here to indicate the missing equations. All right, so these things that are multiplying the variables, x1 through xm, those are called the coefficients. You'll notice that the way they're labeled, the second subscript is always identical to the variable that the coefficient multiplies. See, A11 times x1, A12 times x2, A1m times xm in the first equation. So the second coefficient, the second subscript on this coefficient, aij, always refers to the variable that it's multiplying, while the first subscript is telling you which equation it's in. So the equations are effectively labeled by the initial subscripts, the i's here, and the variables that are being multiplied by the coefficient are indicated by the second subscript. All right, this is a convention that we'll adhere to throughout the course. And the variables themselves, we also label them by a symbol, a letter X with a particular subscript. And here, the subscripts on the variables is simply to label which variable we're talking about. And so what I want you to see from the form of this system of equations labeled by one is that a linear system corresponds to effectively a set of coefficients, the aijs, a set of variables, the xjs, and the numbers that appear on the right-hand side, which I'll call inhomogeneous terms. All right, so this is the sort of objects we'll be concerned with in the first part of today's lecture. And what I want to do is, well, first of all, generalize the first two examples of our linear systems. If you have a large linear system, as such as is indicated by this equation one, the first statement is that its solution set is either going to be empty. Well, how could that possibly happen? Well, I can show you a system of equations with no solution quite easily. If you have x plus y is equal to 2, that's one equation. Let's add a second equation. Let's put x plus y equals minus 3. Well, here I have two equations in two unknowns, but there's no solution, right? Because it's impossible for 2 to equal minus 3. And I would have to conclude that if both these equations are true, simply by the transitivity of equalities, I would have 2 is equal to x plus y is equal to x plus y with equal to minus 3. So this is because the equation implies 2 is equal to minus 3, which is false. So the pair of equations imply a contradiction. So it's possible that you can write down a bunch of equations that won't have any solution. But other than this contradictory case, it will turn out that the solution set of a linear system is always going to be one of these hyperplanes, a set of the form, set of vectors of the form p0 plus t1 d1 plus t2 d2 dot 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 plus tk dk. All right, so as when we actually solve linear systems, our goal will be to express the solution, not as a single vector, because typically we'll have infinitely many solutions. But we don't want to actually write down infinitely many solutions, so we specify those infinite sets as hyperplanes. And this will be typically the way we write down the answer through solution of a set of equations of the form one. All right, so that's where we're going, but it's going to take some time before we're actually solving linear systems. The first thing I'm going to do is recast the problem of solving systems of linear equations away from the way we treat them in high school, where you're basically concentrating on the variables, solving from one variable, substituting into another equation to solve for another variable, substitute that into a third equation. All that rigmarole of solving for particular variables and substituting into subsequent equations, this is what we'll actually be trying to avoid in linear algebra. But it's going to take some development before we reach the point where we can avoid the substitution method for solving linear equations and work directly with the data that specifies the equation directly. All right, so the first task I'm going to do is I'm going to organize the data that's used to specify a linear system. All right, so here's a linear system. Ignore this numbering on the right-hand side, but here's a linear system. And we have a set of, looks like a total of n equations. You can deduce that just by looking at the first subscript of the coefficients in these equations. The first subscript is always indicating which equation you're looking at. So we have a total of n equations, and the number of unknowns we have is m. We call that an n by m linear system. And to write such a system down, what we have to do is specify, well, how many coefficients do we have? We have, in each row, we have m coefficients, but we have a total of n rows. So the total number of coefficients is going to be m times n. And we have m variables, and we have n numbers. So the data that actually goes in to writing down a system like 2x plus 3 is equal to 3, x minus y is equal to x, let's put y on the same side. 2x plus 3y is equal to 3, and let's say x is equal to 1. Here we have three equations in two unknowns. Our coefficients are a11 is equal to 2, so that's the coefficient of the first variable in the first equation. And meanwhile, in the first equation, the coefficient of the second variable, y, is going to equal 3. And in the second equation, we have coefficient of the first variable is equal to 1, and the coefficient of the second variable in the second equation is 2. And let's see, in the third equation, coefficient of the third equation, first variable, its coefficient is 1, but the second variable, y, doesn't appear in the third equation, and so we write that as 0. So that's how I read off the coefficients. The numbers, b1 is equal, number on the right-hand side of the first equation is 3, b2 is equal to 2, and b3 is equal to 1. I'm just reading the numbers that appear on the right-hand side of each equation, and I'm calling those b1, b2, and b3. And then finally, our variables, x1 would x, and the second variable would be y. So that's how we would take apart the system and break it up into the data used to specify it. A bunch of coefficients, a pair of variables, and a set of three numbers.
Is A22 negative 1 and not 2?
Let's see. Oh, you're right. You're right. You're absolutely right. Sorry for that.
It's good.
Yeah, you read it directly or connect to the variable. So you're correlating the first equation telling you what equation you're looking at, and the second index here is telling you which variable you're looking at. All right, so in linear algebra, what we do, instead of working directly with equations, rather we choose to organize the data differently. We're gonna organize all this data, the coefficients, the variables, and the numbers into what we'll call matrices. So what are matrices? It's going to be now an arrangement, an n by n matrix. And frequently, just for nomenclature here, when I say n by n matrix, I'll often write this as n looks like times n matrix. So that's the same thing. I'll tend to use this notation, but if you're listening to me, I'll tend to say n by n. All right, so an n by n matrix is going to be a set of n times m numbers with aij, where these superscripts are going to vary. The I's are going to run from 1 to n, and the index j is going to run from 1 to m. But what we do is we arrange these numbers into a rectangular arrangement where n rows and m columns. So here you see how it's working. Now, when we were thinking about equations, the first index told us which equation we're in, and the second index of these coefficients told us which variable was attached to. But in this matrix arrangement of this data, the first index is telling us which row it coefficient lies in, and the second index is telling us which column. See, in this first, second row, all the coefficients or all the entries there have an initial index of 2. But the second index is being varied as we change columns. All right, so that's simple enough. We now, that will be in what we call an n by n matrix. Now, we can also take the other data, the variables and the numbers, the inhomogeneous terms b1 through n, we can always put those in matrices as well. Except what we'll do is we'll write them as matrices where we have a single column and an n and a bunch of rows. So we call such a matrix an n-dimensional column vector. When we arrange these numbers in a single column vertically, and we'll still call that an n by one matrix because it has n rows and one column. So I'm still following the nomenclature of the preceding example. Here we had n rows and n columns, and we call that an n by one matrix. If we have n rows in a single column, we'll call that an n by one matrix. But we could also choose to write the entries of a matrix horizontally. And if we have a single row, we'll call that an m-dimensional row vector. What it is, it's a rectangular arrangement of numbers into a rectangular way with one row and a total of m columns. All right, so on this page, I have two different kinds of vectors, column vectors and row vectors. Well, last week we talked about vectors as ordered lists of numbers. So this is going to cause some semantic problems. The way I want you to think of column vectors and row vectors is these are matrices of a particular shape. If I'm talking about a column vector, it's going to be an arrangement of numbers into a single column. If I'm talking about a row vector, I'm talking about an arrangement of numbers into a single row. Now, when I talk about a pure vector, I'm simply talking about an ordered list of numbers. And I'm not talking about how it's arranged on the paper. I'm talking about simply a list and whether I write it horizontally, vertically, or diagonally. What I'm doing is I'm reading from left to right or top to bottom or from upper left to lower right to get that ordering. So vectors are they refer just to the ordering of numbers, but when I say column vector or row vector, now I'm looking at particular arrangements of those numbers and so on the piece of paper, not as an abstract list, but how I am actually writing them down on a piece of paper, either vertically or horizontally. All right, and then typically to distinguish, for example, horizontal, these row vectors from ordered lists of numbers, notice I'm not inserting the commas here. So that's why I'm not inserting this expression, square brackets, and the list of objects. It is sort of a list. There is a particular order to it. But because I'm not inserting the commas in there, I don't want you to think of it as the sort of vectors we were dealing with last week, because this will also be interpretable not as an ordered list of numbers, but as a rectangular arrangement of numbers. Okay, so this is going to cause some semantic problems, but once you accept this understanding that an ordered list of numbers, a vector, has two representations as a matrices, either as a column matrix or as a row matrix, once you understand that, then it won't be so confusing. Okay, so so this note here is explaining what I just said. And When we write a more general matrix, say with multiple rows and multiple columns, I'll tend to denote those the general matrix by a boldface capital letter, and we'll indicate the entries of a matrix, typically using lowercase letters with two subscripts. The first subscript is going to be called the row index. It's going to tell you which row a given entry lives, and the second index is telling you which column it lives. So back to this original picture here. Here it is. So here's a matrix that I'm representing by a single letter, but to emphasize that it's a matrix, I'm writing it in boldface. But what it represents is a collection of numbers that have been written in this rectangular grid. The first component in the first row and first column is going to be labeled A11. And I can think of this as a variable. It's just a symbolic symbol for the entry that lives in the first row and first column of this matrix. And similarly, this A22 guy is the entry in this rectangular array that lives in the second row and second column, etc. All right, so now the data that we use to specify a set of n equations in m unknowns, so-called n by n linear system, well, we have a bunch of coefficients, and those we're going to encapsulate in a matrix A. We're also going to have a column vector that corresponds to the variables. If we have a system, an n by m system, m refers to the number of variables. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to arrange the variables as a column vector. Now, I'll arrange the coefficients of a n by m linear system. I'll arrange them as a n by m matrix. And the numbers that appear on the right-hand side, I'm going to arrange those also as a column vector. Since I have a total of n equations, I'm going to have one inhomogeneous term for each equation, and so I'll have a total of n components for this column vector of inhomogeneous terms. All right, so what this notation is going to allow us to do is to take this linear system and write it in a different way, where the emphasis is now is not so much on the equations, but the data that goes into specifying the equations. Now, the reason for doing this, ripping this set of equations apart into the data and writing it in this fashion, is because eventually we're going to interpret the left-hand side of this equation as a product. You think of this as a matrix A times a column vector X is going to equal a column vector B. And so this is actually going to be an identity once we understand what this product is, how to multiply this column vector X by this matrix A. But before we discuss that multiplication, let's do a quick example where we take a matrix, or we take a set of equations, and we extract from that set of equations the matrix and the column vector that are the essential data that goes into specifying that linear system. Right, so here's the coefficient matrix. How did I get it? Well, to get that first row, I take the first equation, and the first thing I do is I look at the coefficients of each variable. So x1 occurs with coefficient 1. This first term is effectively 1 times x1. The second variable, x2, does not appear in this first equation. So we think of that as 0 times x2. Now, if I added that to this equation, so what I'm saying here is x1 plus 2x3 plus x4, well, that left-hand side is the same thing as 1 times x1 plus 0 times x2 plus...
Can you move the paper down?
Oh, sorry. This The left-hand side of that first equation is 1 times x1, 0 times x2, 2 times x3, plus 1 times x4. So what I'm grabbing for that first row of the matrix are these coefficients, 1, 0, 2, 1, and I'm writing them in exactly the same order as they occur in this equation. Similarly, the second equation is 2 times x1 minus 1 times x2. The x3 and x4 do not appear in that equation, so they occur with zero coefficient. And similarly, for that last, the last row with this matrix corresponds to the coefficients on the left-hand side of the third equation. And then the inhomogeneous terms, well, we extract those from the linear system by just writing down the numbers that appear on the right-hand side in the same order, except we write them now vertically, so we form a vector, a column vector from these numbers. All right, so the original linear system becomes this matrix equation. But again, my purpose here is not to simply give you a different way of rewriting a system of equations. Rather, what's going to happen here is we're going to start with a general linear system. We'll reformulate it as a matrix equation. But the point of this reformulation is going to be that we can interpret the left-hand side of the matrix equation 1 as being some sort of matrix multiplication. And once we learn how to evaluate this matrix multiplication, then we'll get a series of identities that will actually replicate exactly the original n by n linear system. All right, so let me show you how this works. We'll start off with some simple cases and develop up to the general case in just a few slides. So first of all, if you have an n-dimensional row vector and you have an n-dimensional column vector, then we can form a matrix product A times B. Here's its definition. Okay, so since A is a row vector, I'll write out its entries as a list of n numbers written horizontally. Since B is a column vector, I'll write its n components vertically. And now placing that row vector adjacent to the column vector, that's going to symbolize the matrix product AB. But what follows in the second line is its actual definition. When I place a row vector next to a column vector, what that represents is actually this sum. The first component of the first row vector times the first component of the column vector plus the second component of the row vector times the second component of the column vector. So what you see, what I've done here is effectively by writing this matrix and adjacent to the second column matrix, is I say that stands for effectively the dot product of this ordered list A1 through AN with the ordered list B1 through BN. It's just the dot product of two vectors when I think of these as ordered lists of numbers rather than as rectangular arrangements of numbers. But that, in fact, is going to be the definition of what it means to take the matrix product of one row vector with a column vector. Now let's look at a little more strenuous matrix product. Now I'm going to have a true n by m matrix, but I'm going to show you how I multiply another matrix, this time a column vector, by this n by m matrix. So here's its definition. The product of this n by m matrix by this m by 1 column vector is going to be, well, what I've gotten written down here is a list of a total of n numbers. Each number is going to be a sum constructed from the components of these two objects, but it's just a single component. So after evaluation, the right-hand side here just becomes a column containing n different numbers. And what I hope you see here is the individual entries in each row of this column vector on the right is effectively a dot product. Notice this first column here corresponds to an ordered list where the first entry is A11 and the last entry is A1M. And I'm taking this list of M numbers and I'm effectively taking its dot product with this m-dimensional vector. So this is the first component of the first row times the first component of x. The second component of the first row of A times the second component of x. So I'm just taking dot products of these rows thought of as vectors with the columns of the second factor, x, thought of also as vectors. All right, so what this is telling me that is that the product of a n by m matrix with a column vector with m components is going to be a column vector with n components for which the individual entries are going to be given by, well, to get the entry in the ith row with the result, you take the ith row of the matrix factor and you take its dot product with the single column vector x, thought of as an ordinary ordered list of numbers. All right, so let's do one. Let's do a computation of such this. Here's a 3x4 matrix, and I'm going to multiply this matrix that's, I guess, a 4x1 matrix. So here we set it up. At this stage, I've just written the matrix adjacent to that column vector. But the rule is going to be to get the three components of this product, I'm going to think of this first row as a vector. So, and I'm going to think of this column vector as a vector, and I'm going to take their dot products. And so here, that first component is 1 times x1, 0 times x2, 2 times x3, plus 1 times x4. And so hopefully you see how these dot products evaluate these three components here. And the expression on the right here, this final expression is the computation of this matrix product. Here's the answer. So what this tells me is, so now here what I'm doing is I'm computing the left-hand side of what could be, if you look at this, this is our matrix formulation of a linear system. What I've shown you in this preceding slide is how to compute this matrix product. So now I'm no longer simply writing down a matrix next to a column vector. I'm actually thinking that it's a product. In the same way as you think 3 times 5 is equal to 15, I'm evaluating that product. That's what this last expression represents. It's the value of this matrix product. So my original equations in matrix form, where was it? Somewhere back here. Well, here's the matrix formulation, where here's the coefficient matrix, the column vector of variables, the inhomogeneous terms on the right-hand side. When I actually evaluate that matrix product, what happens is component by component, I reproduce the original system of equations. Unfortunately, I didn't put this on the same screen. So here's the left-hand side. It's x1 plus 2x3 plus x4 in the first component, 2x1 minus x2 in the second component. So when I evaluate the left-hand side here, I get exactly what occurs component by component when I evaluate this matrix product. And then what I have on the right-hand side are just these numbers written in the same order. So in fact, it's via this matrix multiplication that the matrix reformulation of a linear system actually becomes equivalent to the original linear system. So in other words, this single matrix equation I guess what I want to say here, so let me take a simpler system. 2x plus y is equal to 1, and x minus y is equal to 2. Matrix formulation of that would be 2, 1, 1 minus 1, x, y is equal to 1, 2. What I'm saying here is that we now have a way of evaluating this, and what it works out to be is 2x plus y and x minus y, but we still, I'm just evaluating the left-hand side and evaluate to this. And now when I compare these two vectors component by component, I'm replicating the original set of equations. So what linear algebra is doing for us is taking sets of equations and reformulating them as a single matrix equation. Here's our set of equations, and here's our single matrix equation. Okay, well, I'm about out of time, but this is also a convenient starting point. What we'll do, first thing on Friday, I guess, is to discuss how we multiply more general matrices together. But I'm going to delay that development until Friday. So I'll stop here. I'll hang around in case there are questions, but otherwise I will see you on Friday.
I had a quick question about hyperplanes. It's sure. In one of the first slides. I can tell you which slide number it is.
Okay, let me get back to the share screen.
So in slide 11, we have a theorem that the solution of an n by m linear system is
always
either
a hyperplane,
yeah, set or a hyperplane.
Yeah. Yeah, so I haven't proved that, but
oh, sorry.
Well, we actually,
that's one size
so, so you're not expected to know that. I'm telling you that. Later on,
sure.
When we actually
it's
start
a slide where there's a theorem about the empty set and the hyperplane.
Yeah, yeah. So well, let's see. Yeah, here. This is what you're talking about. Yeah. So I haven't proved the statement. What I'm trying to do is motivate why we introduced matrices to begin with. And to see that, in fact, when we have an m by n linear system, we always get a hyperplane. What I'm going to do is I'm going to reformulate the linear system as matrix equations. And then what we'll find is once I learn how to solve those matrix equations, that these kind of solution sets naturally pop out. So I'm stating it as a theorem so you know what's coming, but I haven't proved the theorem by any means.
Is K equal to N minus M? Meaning if we have N...
Usually. But if you have a set of...
four equations.
K, if you have a set of K independent equations, then in fact, yes, the number of directions you need is always going to equal to, generally speaking, when you have three equations and four unknowns, your solution set is going to be, well, each equation sort of allows you to eliminate one variable.
Right.
So if you start off with four variables, you have three equations, you end up with one free variable. That situation is going to be mimicked here. But so there is some way that you can guess the size of the solution set by figuring out how many equations you have and subtracting off the number.
Because if you have two equations that are multiples of each other,
then
they don't provide you more
solutions. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
So all those little technicalities that crop up, we're going to handle those explicitly. We're not going to shove them under the rug. So when we actually carefully formulate things, all those special cases are going to be included.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
I also had a question.
Sure.
Whenever we were talking about the two different equations and having one solution set, does that mean that those two, like there's these two planes and then they meet at that point?
Yeah, well, or
not really.
You're right. You're exactly on the right track. Let me tell you exactly what's going on. So in general, one equation in, say, M unknowns, this corresponds to a M minus one dimensional hyperplane. Because what you're doing is you're starting off of a space where the variables could be any one of, well, you have M variables and they could be any number. But once you impose an equation, you can eliminate one equation. So you sort of reduce the possible values by one dimension. Now, when I had two equations in one unknown, well, so that's going to be a 2 minus 1 dimensional solution set. So it's going to be one dimensional. And that's going to be a line. So in fact, when you have two equations and two unknowns, each equation is going to correspond to a line in their intersection, place where they both hold simultaneously, is going to be a single point. So your geometric intuition is absolutely correct, but it's going to take a little bit more development until we see how this situation generalizes to larger systems of equations and more variables. Okay.
Awesome. Thank you.